Jesse.
All right, this is the Public Safety Committee meeting for September 12th. I'm calling this meeting to order. I'm going to call the roll, and currently we have Councilmember Evans and Councilmember Fullerton over the TV. And I am in physical attendance. But we're going to move to agenda item number C, which is the approval of the minutes from July 11th.
So move.
Second. There. Okay, I got a thumbs up. Okay, now we're going to move on to agenda item D for the department reports and presentations. East Pierce Fire and Rescue's monthly report, Chief Parkinson is not present, but his report was sent via email for those that would like to look at that and review that. Moving to D2 here, we have Bonnie Lake Police Department monthly report. Take it away, Chief Boyle.
Hello, so we have an increase a little bit on DUIs for the year. We've got 32 over the 29 from last year. Some of our traffic citations are up as well. We've got infractions, traffic violations at 639 this year versus the 442 from last year. A couple other points I wanted to bring up is we have, let's see here, we had a, it's on the first page. Let's see, we had a DV trespass at Allen York Park on National Night Out. So what it was is the officers recognized a suspect from DV assault that night while we're doing National Night Out and arrested him. So even while we're performing our National Night Out duties, we're still doing vigilance. Traffic stop, we had a traffic stop with a pursuit off of the Bonnie Lake Boulevard on 193rd, ended with a stolen vehicle and recovery, and the suspect arrested. Another thing to note is, let's see, is it on here? Oh yeah, we had another failed to yield vehicle, yield in Famous Footwear, and the suspect fled out of the area, and there's no failed to pursue it. That's all I really have for an update for us outside of, we did have one thing that was not mentioned on here that I just came across today. We had a carjacking suspect leave a stolen vehicle at Allen York Park Ball Field 4 after I got this information, and we've got recovered the vehicle, but it was out of Tacoma. So we're getting Tacoma crime up here as well.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much for that. We're going to move to our next report, Prosecutor's Office Monthly Report. Prosecutor Burke, take it away.
Thank you. For the month of August, we had a total of 305 court hearings. 21 of those were arraignments, so those new charges being filed. We had
80, how many were arraignments?
21.
Okay.
Here's a copy of it, too.
Awesome, thank you.
21 of those were new arraignments, so new charges being filed. 88 were pretrial hearings, so that's a case that's already that we're going through and negotiating with defense counsel. We did have 28 score and custody hearings, so we still are, working. We have some defendants where that's the kind of the only place that they can be held in custody due to various reasons. So we're working on those cases. So we had a total of 305 court appearances that the city did in the month of August. We're still providing a lot of discovery to defense counsel. Our legal specialist sent out 81 discovery packets in August, and she processed 30.5 hours of body-worn camera. So that includes sending it to defense counsel and also viewing it.
30.5 hours?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. We will move on to the next report, emergency management from Raging Creek. Go ahead.
Sure. Hello. So first of all, sorry I couldn't be with you in July. I know that John Vodopich spoke with you in July about our exercise that we held, and I just wanted to let you guys know it was fantastic. We had many, many city employees that participated in the exercise and lots of lessons learned. So our EOC team is going to be working on some training this basically through the fourth quarter of the year in preparation for our next exercise, which just kind of a save the date. It will be March 21st of 2024. And so it'll be our next Lahar evacuation exercise with the school districts here in the east part of the county.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And so we have a lot of work to get ready for that within this East Pierce area and with the districts. This exercise will revisit the Lahar evacuation component, but it will also be touching on some of the reunification components that the school districts are starting to work on. So it'll be a pretty fantastic exercise, I do believe. The other thing is that we're pretty excited. We, as part of our budget, we were approved to order some satellite phones, so we would have some redundancy in communications should we have another incident like the Sumner Grade fire where everybody's cell phones didn't work. And so we went ahead and procured those satellite phones, and they have now arrived. Chuck and I have been working on getting them set up and registered and all that fun stuff. We're developing a policy and procedure document now, and they'll be rolling out to the individuals that they're for here this month. So we'll have those in place before the end of September.
Okay. I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
In regards to the exercise for the Lahar, this was in reference to what steps to take if people come up into, like, move to us.
The one that we had in July?
Yes.
Yes. So
okay.
The one that we had in July was regarding mass care.
Mm.
So if we had an influx of people that came into the area, if we had to shelter them or feed them or move them to another area. So there were, all different types of conditions around that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a Lahar scenario. It was mm-hmm. actually a large flood incident down
okay.
in the valley, but it required the evacuation or self-evacuation of folks that just left the area
right.
And came up the hill. So the team and the EOC was, they had to figure out how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty good exercise.
That's great. What
yes.
were some of the takeaways, I guess, from that? Because that's pretty stressful trying to figure out how to do mass care.
Yes. So the first one was training. I heard that loud and clear. Everyone, the feedback from everyone was really positive. They were happy to be there. It was very upbeat. It was a really great vibe in the room, actually, which usually is a lot more stressful. So I think everyone did a great job just kind of getting into it and, touching and feeling everything. But loud and clear, they want more training. So we'll be separating everyone by function and doing some position specific training. So specific to planning or specific to operations, logistics. Doing some position specific training with them so they learn a bit more about their task.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing that they wanted some more information about the specific plans. So we'll be touching on some of those. Some of them need updates before we do that. So we have to tweak a few things before we revisit it. But,
mm-hmm.
And then obviously just, as a next step, we didn't actually stand up a shelter. So as a next step, we need to actually identify sites where we could set up a shelter
okay.
because currently our only facility we would utilize if we needed to is the senior center, and it just doesn't fit that many people.
Okay.
So we need to identify some sites and then finish procuring our items so that we can stand up a shelter.
Okay, I did have one more question.
Yes.
With the satellite phones, that's what a great idea. Obviously, the communication was an issue when the cell phones were having problems. How many, and then how are you guys determining who is going to get a cell phone as far as, the people that move all the PCs?
So there are five. That's what we had funding for. And that was actually predetermined when we put everything forward to the budget for the budget last year.
Uh-huh.
Those phones really are just key for emergency scenarios only. So they're being given to essentially directors so that they can keep operations moving in the city. So
okay.
John Votopich will have one, Ryan Johnstone, Chuck McEwen. Fire chief, police chief, and then myself.
Okay. Do you feel like five is adequate in order to be able to communicate in mass?
I think there's room to discuss more, but it's a first step.
Okay.
I think it's a first step in us at least being able to communicate with the directors over the departments that have essential functions during a disaster.
Okay, very good to know. Okay, any questions? Oh, yes.
Yes.
Council Member Fulton, go ahead, you have the floor.
Yeah, I was wondering, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. I was wondering if there was opportunity for like local churches or anyone else to be able to be part of the emergency places for people to stay.
Yes, 100%. So that's going to be part of the next focus, right, is determining where those locations are and then putting agreements in place so that if we do need to stand up a shelter, we already have that agreement in place, we can utilize it, we know who to contact, you know, maybe we can store items there if we need to, or how we get into the facility after hours, or, you know, all those types of things that would be part of an agreement with them. But absolutely, churches, schools, you know, different centers around the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then also I see Ryan is there. So I have a question about the cooling units at the senior center. Were we able to figure out something for that for safety purposes, since that is our location for emergency situations?
So at this time, Mike Englert, our facilities maintenance worker three, I believe he's completed or is nearing completion of the installation of the two heat pumps that we procured. In order to hear the immediate need for cooling at the senior center. Long-term, we're still working with the state on additional funds to do additional work on the HVAC system.
Thank you.
Okay, Council Member Evans, any questions or thoughts as of yet?
Negative, thank you though.
Okay, excellent. Okay, I did have one more question. It was for Chief Boyle. In regards to the CSO, I know that some of the things that I've been hearing from residents regularly is having everything to do with, you know, these stores that aren't necessarily complying with, you know, because they're larger entities, basically, in helping to curb crime and to stop people from shoplifting and things like that. So. And I know before we had been talking at public safety about potentially having the CSO contact businesses again and trying to move up the chain to try to get communication to, you know, request that we want something done to be able to curb crime. Is there any update on that?
I'm going to have to get back with you. I'm not 100% sure on who they contacted, but I know they've been out there making some contacts at the stores.
Okay. Very good. Okay. All right.
I got a question for Assistant Chief Boyle. Have we heard anything about the statue?
It's still an ongoing investigation. I don't have an update to provide you just yet, but we're still working on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on to agenda item E. We have AB 23-132, resolution 3180 in regards to interagency agreement between Washington State and the Bonnie Lake Municipal Court. And I will hand it on over.
And I've got that one. Thank you.
Okay.
This is a renewal of, as you said, an interagency agreement with the Administrative Office of the Courts in the Bonnie Lake Municipal Court. It's a reimbursement for ongoing needs for interpreter and language access throughout the year. So it runs through the fiscal year of July 1st, 2023 to June 30th of 2024 for maximum reimbursement of $6,144. And it is on your consent agenda for this evening.
Okay, that's great. Are we okay with moving this on to the consent agenda for tonight?
What is it? The reimbursement for interpreter services.
Oh, yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. I know we've been doing it for a while.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, now we're going to move to discussion item E2 for the derelict home. We're going to receive an update from Jason and or Shady or both.
Well, I'm going to take the lead, LeBron.
All right.
Shaylee Wilkinson is our new code enforcement officer, who's been with the city just a little over a year now, correct?
Yeah, she doesn't get the new label anymore.
I know.
Yeah. Well, the reason I point that out is it's important to remember, too, that between 2017 and 2022, we did not have a code enforcement officer, and we did not, and during COVID, per our continuity of government plan, did not have code enforcement as an active member of the government. So we weren't doing code enforcement through the entire pandemic because it was not considered an essential function. And while we were under our state of emergency, it was done. So we really just have ramped up code enforcement recently in the last probably 18 months. So with the site in question, I did have Shaylee go out and take a couple site visits. So it's a whole packet.
Give an electronic copy.
I have one for you.
Okay, thank you.
So this property has been in and out of code enforcement. I will say, of all of the properties in the city, this is probably one of our more tamer sites compared to some of our really derelict properties out there, just as a matter of magnitude. Not to take away that it's not important, it's just it's not the worst of the bunch, I would say. Just from a brief background, there was a notice of violation issued in 2017, right at the tail end of doing code enforcement. They got the property into compliance in October of 2017. A new request for action was filed in September of 2021. That request for action and another one in October of 2021. A notice of violation was issued in June 28 of 2022. That's why we mentioned we weren't doing code enforcement. Mm-hmm. We had a backlog that we had to work through, mm-hmm. which is why it took some time between the dates of the request for action. Shaylee, you were hired in
May of 2022.
Yeah. So between until May of 2022, we didn't have code enforcement. So that's why there's that gap between the 2021 dates and May of 2022. In August of 2022, we did a work plan. They brought the property into compliance, and then in March 3rd, of 2023, they were issued the notice of compliance, and we got another request for action on August 7th. If you look through the packets, the first picture is of the what it looked like in 17. We got it all cleaned up. It got bad again in 2022. We took some additional pictures. You can see the pictures from June of 2023. A lot of the garbage is removed, but there's still a vegetation issue. And then you can see on August 8th, it was cleaned back up. And then as of September 12th, the last picture, you can see that the property is clean. Now, remember, code enforcement is not a neighbor homeowners association. We're not out there to beautify. We have very strict standards. And we operate code enforcement under our police powers, similar to the PD. So everything we do is similar to the PD. We can't go on people's property without a search warrant. And you actually can't get search warrants for code enforcement. So everything we do is from the right of way. So if we cannot see it from the public right of way or from another public vantage point, we really can't enforce it because we can't go onto people's property and in their backyard and looking in windows because we're operating under that same criminal search and seizures that the police do, at least from a legal standard if we were in court. So everything we do is from the public right of way. So from the public right of way, there's not really a lot on this property at this point to enforce. We know there's some issues with it being not lived in. There's a kind of the kitchen's been gutted. That's really, unless we could get on the property to go and look at it, that's hard for us to enforce. We do know that the property owner has signed a no trespass agreement with the Bonnie Lake Police Department that would allow the Bonnie Lake Police Department to arrest people who are on the site. However, until the Bonnie Lake Police Department, until the property owner installs that sign, you've seen them like over at the park and stuff, the white sign that says, this you're trespassing if you're on this property, until the homeowner does that, the PD can't take their action. And that contract for the no trespass is a limited contract. It doesn't give us permission to go tromping around the property. It doesn't give us permission to go and look for other violations. It's a limited contract to allow the police department to go on the property for the limited purpose of detaining people who are trespassing. But they have to post the sign. Are there other things that we could do? Yes. However, that's where the council really comes involved. We are going to bring, there are things you can do like chronic nuisance property codes. You can do physical abatement where the city goes on the property and either cleans the property up or boards the property up to prevent it from getting a further decline. However, unless the council funds those programs, we can't do that. We could go onto a site right now and abate a violation, but we have no funding to do that. So we get past, the best we can do with code enforcement at this point is we can fine people $1,000 a day for every day we go out and notice the violations there. That is effective for some violations, but if you're hoarding junk all over your property and it's a flop house, me adding one more bill to your already things in collection really isn't a threat. We can lien the prop. We can put a notice of violation on the property, which will cloud the title when they go to sell it. And that's really good for illegal buildings, because when they go to sell it, they'll get their illegal buildings cleaned up. Not so much for trash. We can get it declared unfit for human habitation. This building doesn't meet those standards based on what we can see from the public right away. Once we get it declared unfit for human habitation, we can get an order from the hearing examiner to have the property declared unfit and the property vacated. Once we have that order and we post that order on the site, the police department can then arrest people under the same provisions of you're trespassing, you're not supposed to be here by a legal order, because violating that order of the hearing examiner is a misdemeanor, which gives the authority for, it's a different avenue, but it allows the police to arrest people. So once we can declare a house unfit for human habitation, and we get it posted, we can prevent it from people coming to the site, but that doesn't get the property cleaned up. You know, a lot of times we hear people want us to take action, and I think the action they're wanting to take is, what are we doing to clean up the property? In order to have that, we have to have a robust abatement program, and that requires abatement funding. The code enforcement budget right now is $5,000 per year, and we basically use that money for recording fees, and just doing three recordings, we've pretty much, how was the last?
It's about $250 per recording.
And we do the unfit dwellings, how much were those? I think those were more.
Oh yeah, averaging like 3,000 for unfit dwelling.
Recording fees.
Wow. 3,000 is the recording fees?
Not just for recording, that's total fees.
Okay.
So attorneys fees
and those types of things. Okay. And so with a $5,000 budget, we've done like three of those this year. I'm already over budget just doing the administrative process of it. So, you know, the next step is we are going to be bringing forward a chronic nuisance code. It was part of the code enforcement update by the end of the year that will give us some more tools when it comes to declaring, well, you have, this isn't a violation, but you have this pattern out of ongoing violations, which is kind of what this falls into. Mm-hmm. Like they just keep getting violations when they clean them up. But if you have a chronic nuisance code, you can say, well, if you have so many violations within a certain window, you're a chronic nuisance. And then we're going to take these steps. However, those steps are the steps that are the boarding up the property, cleaning up the property. You know, we towed. Oh, the other thing that we did this year is we did tow two vehicles that were part on private property, part in the right of way off of 192nd. I think just the towing of those two properties blew our entire code enforcement budget. So we're already operating in the red, just trying to do the administrative portion of code enforcement. We've done pretty much like all we can do. We're missing those other tools, if I'm explaining that right. It's like, we'll bring you the chronic nuisance code that would allow us to take properties that are constantly in nuisance and get cleaned up and take further actions, but it's gonna be how much of that is going to take actions. A couple years ago, we did look at doing a property cleanup, John, in Cedar View. We got a bid, and I want to say it was it wasn't this property. It was a different property. It had some trash and garbage. It was about a $20,000 price tag just to do the one property. So it's, we don't have that type of a budget to do those types of things.
We tore one down in Cedar Beach too, didn't we?
No, we brought everything. That was what we were going to do. We were going to
the McBay House fire one. McBay, was that on Bonnie Lake Boulevard?
Oh, there was that one we did tear down years ago.
And then we put a lien on it.
And we put a lien on it. That was, I think that was like 7 or 8 years ago.
Oh,
Oh. And then about 2016, 2017, we had one where the neighbors were not happy. And we went in and we were going to do the, basically board it up and rip all the dirt. And I mean, they had piles of rotting garbage on the property. And we brought it to council, and the council voted 7-0 to not fund the abatement. They, at that time, that council felt that it was not the council's duty to clean up property. So we have been operating to, with kind of the threats and carrots as much as we can. But once they just ignore us, there's not much we can do to do that. And a lot of times, if it's squatters, we have problems with squatter rights. And so the homeowners are trying to get, the property owners are trying to get the squatters out. And all we can really do is go after the homeowner who's working with us to try to get the squatters out. We can't go after the squatters because it's the property owner's responsibility.
Several cases where the owners are no longer living. Nobody has rights to property.
Even if there was like a police department eviction?
If there was a police department eviction, but once again, that goes back to the property owner doing the eviction.
Yeah.
We have to get the abatement order and secure the property. And between legal fees and doing the work, you're going to spend anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 because you have to go to Pierce County Superior Court, which is Jennifer filing motions and go through that process. It's not something that happens overnight. It's kind of up to the council how aggressive we want to be on these. I will say that this, I know there's another property that was brought to the committee's attention that's coming back in October, and it is significantly worse than this one. I will put this in context. Most of the properties that we've gotten cleaned up over the last years, we've gotten lucky because the property owner finally has decided to sell the property, they move, and then the next homeowner cleans it up. The best one is like Blake's property. Its code enforcement case was filed in 1998. It was cleaned up 91. In 2022. Oh,
91.
Oh, 91. Oh. It took us from 1991 to 2022 to clean it up. And the only reason it got cleaned up was Mr. Blake passed away and the new property owner worked with us to clean it up.
Where was that at?
Right off of 190.
Right across from Discount Tire, the old school bus that was down there. In the
Oh, yeah.
And it was a notorious drug flop. It was, I mean, we tried everything. We would threaten, we would cajole, but we never had the funds to go in and tow the junk vehicles off or board up the abandoned buildings. And so that one took us almost 30 years to close, and it really got closed because the person passed away. So I asked the committee kind of what steps would you like us to take, or what tools would you like us to bring forward?
I mean, wouldn't hurt to, because has there been anything in a budget decision card?
We, back when Denny was our code enforcement officer, I think we had about $15,000 in the line item for abatement, and that just went away over the years.
And there should be $9,999 every year, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and as I recall,
that way he doesn't have to come to us.
Yeah, as
and then you get it.
As I recall, it was a number put forward for this current biennial budget, but for whatever reason, it didn't make it.
To be successful and cover all the costs, you're probably looking at anywhere from $50,000 to $75,000.
Yeah, as the baseline.
As the baseline, just to, that would allow us to do one or two cleanups. It would also allow us to do some other inventive things like. We don't even have money. We worked a deal with the trash disposal company that they'll bring the dumpster for free and pick it up for free. We have to pay the dump fees. Mm-hmm. We don't have the money to pay the dump fees. So there are property owners that don't have the money to do it, and they're gladly clean up the property, like get people from their church to help them or friends to help them, but they don't have the dumpster and can't afford the dump fees. You know, that kind of money would allow us to do a couple dumpsters a year where Shaylee can go out and put that in there and let them dump it. We call Murray's. Murray's picks it up, dumps it. The property's cleaned up, and all we really paid was the dump fees. Whether or not that's the role, that's a policy decision, but those are the types of tools we have that we have at our disposal to get properties cleaned up. Because the problem we have is we get to a point where all we have left to do is fine you and lien your property. And fining you and liening your property works in some cases, does a lot of work with derelict properties, because if it did, you wouldn't have a derelict property because there would be some investment in the property.
I think a few minutes ago there was a was a question, a hand raised from the audience. Was there a community member wanted to say something?
Not for me, anyway.
Okay. Did you want to?
Did anyone, is anyone here the one that brought this particular one up?
I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're Kevin.
Yeah, I'm Kevin.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
I mean,
this is my neighbor Kathleen, so she's in the same boat as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Mm-hmm. Jason, is this a problem that is continually getting worse, staying the same, or getting... won't necessarily say better, but less over time?
I would say the challenge is most of them, once they go bad, it's just that property keeps getting bad.
Yeah.
This property, I will say, is at the beginning of that slide. It hasn't been taken over by squatters. We're not having, I mean, if I mentioned Benning,
right.
See?
Oh, yeah.
See? I mean, there are properties that we have had, I mean, they have just been, for decades, nuisance properties. Because we get to that point where a new code enforcement officer or staff member tries it. I mean, some of the properties on 192nd, I know Nate and Mary worked on them when they were here. I know Denny worked on them when he was here. And now Shaylee's working on them when she's here. And so I think there are specific properties that once they go bad, they always go bad. And the ones that are on the brink, like this one, there are steps we could take, like boarding it up, getting the no trespassing sign put up, and that would... It wouldn't make it look aesthetically pleasing to the neighbors. I understand that. But it might help us prevent that slide if we have the no trespassing agreement, those types of things. So this is a cheaper kind of solution. Once they start that slide, then it gets really expensive. And I think probably back of the hand, we probably have 30 of these that are in some level throughout the city.
Various levels. The really bad ones, I would say 5 to 7.
But we don't know when that next one will happen. And a lot of times what happens is you have where kind of the way we've seen it is from a progression is either they just are like this, they're not lived in, and they kind of get taken over, or you have a parent who is incapacitated for some reason and their children are not doing the things that they should, and they start trashing the property. And then we're trying to deal with the elderly parents who are saying, well, it's my kids. You know, that we've got a few of those in Cedarview right now that we're trying to work through. We've had some successes, you know, applying pressure and getting the people say, fine, I'm out, I'm going to sell the property. But that's a long multi-year process before they kind of throw their hands up.
So does the homeowner live locally?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so basically next steps, just so I kind of understand the timeline here, the next step is waiting for them to put a no trespassing sign up.
At this point with our current budget, the only, unless something else pops up that we can see from the public right away, or they let their water bill lapse and people are living there, there's some things we can do at that point to get it declared and do the trespassing thing. But right now, the next steps that we can legally do is hopefully they get their sign put up and allow the police to enforce the no trespass agreement.
If they have a no trespassing sign up, because I remember we had to do an eviction on one of our properties before. And so if they put the no trespassing sign up, and let's say squatters were to then go into the property, are those trespassers still protected by these squatting laws?
They can't just put up a no trespassing sign.
Okay.
There's a specific sign in the contract that they have with the Bonita Police Department that says it's about this long with a bunch of text on it.
Okay.
And if they put that sign up, the minute the neighborhood calls and says there's somebody on that property, the police can go out and arrest them on site. Till then, no. And if they don't put that sign up and we don't arrest them and they get into the squatter's rights thing, then we're kind of out of it at that point, and it goes back to the property owner to do the eviction.
Okay, and you're saying that what is stopping the flow of this process is that the homeowner, they have to purchase this sign? Is that what that is? It's a specific sign that has to be purchased.
Yeah, it's a specific sign that, that they have to purchase, and then they install it, and then we've already got the authority from the property owners to go onto the property But even if they don't have a sign, we can still go there, but we're not going to be able to. We can say, hey, you need to leave your trespassing, and they can walk away, but we can't arrest them without this. Unless they come back. Well, in our presence.
Is providing and installing that sign a service we could offer?
Yes.
If we had budget.
How much is this? Is a sign like that? Just ballpark and then to install it?
Probably with staff time to install, you're probably somewhere around $300.
Okay, because I just feel like that's a whole new set of problems once people start squatting on the property.
No, I agree. And that's what I'm saying. If we have, like, if we had the nuisance code, which we are bringing forward.
Okay.
And we had funding, we could go and board up the property in addition to that. So we put basically OSB over all the windows and doors.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop anybody, but it makes it one step
harder.
More
hoops,
yes.
Yeah,
and if the neighborhood then sees the OSB pulled off and we have the sign up, then the cops can go out and sit there and wait for someone to come out of the house and arrest them. So it's just a matter of, like, the amount of, I'm a building guy, so I don't have a better analogy. It's the number of tools we have in our tool belt.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of tools that are sitting on the shelf that just can be purchased and put in the tool belt that we just don't have at this time.
Is there a plan for, like, a mid-biennium budget amendment request?
It's actually specifically for this, not up to this point.
How much are we talking if you were to make a request for more?
We would say probably for next year, give us 50 to 75.
I'd say 75 because we definitely have properties that we would like to do some more.
And I will say one thing that we are starting to do now that we haven't done in the past. Sorry, Ryan, I didn't mean to cut you off. Is we are more proactive on our fining, so we are bringing in more fines. We've actually exceeded our budget revenue projections for the amount of fines we were going to do this year already. I think we're over $10,000 that we've received.
Okay.
We have more outstanding. We are looking at differentiating.
That people have paid?
Yes. So if you're living on Lake Taps or Lake Bonnie and you ignore my first two letters, so the way it typically works, we get a request for action. We go out and we do the investigation. We give you a notice of violation and we give you 30 days to contact us or get it cleaned up. If we then go out after that period and haven't seen any action, then we do what we call an issue and notice of civil penalties. To make sure we're staying on the good side of the Constitution, we only do it for the days that we physically go to the site. So at that point, you're looking at a $1,000 to $2,000 fine. That gets most people's attention, and if they don't appeal it, they end up usually having to pay that. Most people come in with a notice of violation. Our whole code is set up to do voluntary compliance. We'll do 6-month work plans with people that allows them 6 months to correct it, because sometimes it takes longer. We have voluntary correction agreements that give you even more time, because if you've built like a barn or a shed or a house, we have people build houses without permits. So that takes a little bit of time to
stack the conics in front.
Yeah, it takes a little time to unwind those things. So we do voluntary correction agreements for those things. So we are having people pay that. We are looking for, when we bring our code enforcement schedule or code enforcement code forward, to differentiate our fee schedule so that there is a different revenue source. So maybe it's a minor violation, there's a smaller penalty, and you pay that regardless if you correct it. So similarly, like if you get a speeding ticket, you're still going to pay the speeding ticket and not speed in the future. We just don't do that now because if you have a fence that's over height, I really don't think that that's worth $1,000 of the day I go out there and look at it.
Well, if we wanted to, we can make Sky Island Drive.
Yes.
Pay for the violation of the 6-foot fence.
Yes.
For street facing.
I think they're going to be okay. Fixed it for Sky Island. So,
I don't know.
There is a revenue stream out there. It's a staffing and resource issue.
I mean, I don't know if Councilmember Fullerton would agree or not, but I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing a $75,000 mid biennium and then a budget card next year for 150 for the next buying. I mean, all we can say no, but I mean, it's another tool that you have.
Yeah, it opens up a whole,
yeah,
a significant, not just one tool, it opens up a significant number of tools.
I'm going to
Here I am. Okay.
Go ahead, Councilmember Fulton.
Well, actually, I wanted to hear what you had to say, Councilmember Baldwin.
All right. Honestly, this kind of thing gives me pause. It gives me pause because obviously I don't want to give the government any more power than it already has. I don't want, and I understand these kinds of properties. I mean, we have one right next to our house that we owned, and it was a total hit, and, you know, all of the copper wiring had been stripped from the home. People were squatting on the property. There's garbage. It was an eyesore and definitely attracted crime near our house. We were only two houses away. But even with that, I'm struggling. I don't mind us considering adding more so that you do have more tools to be able to abate properties and things like that. I guess my question then becomes, and I'm just thinking of a what if, you know, what if there's a property and, you know, people, a lot of times, you know, properties are handed down, you know, generationally usually, and you have this property and, you know, let's say it's me and I'm 75 and I can no longer handle the property. So then, you know, maybe I am off site, right? I'm somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with all of the issues of crime that we're having in Washington State due to legislation, you know, people are then junking the property. You know, people are coming onto my property and destroying it. Meanwhile, I'm 75. I don't have money. I don't have money to fix these large problems that people are causing on my property. I don't want government to be more punitive, you know, because I think a lot of times that is what's happening with these properties. Where, you know, there's even one across the street from one of my friend's houses. There is an elderly couple there, and they are definitely in their 80s, upper 80s, and they have one son. They have other children too. They have one son that lives there, and he's trashing their property.
Yeah, I would say that these tools are less punitive.
Okay.
The tools that we use now,
yeah,
are the punitive tools because, okay, there's not a cost as much to the city.
Yeah.
So if you play it out, I could actually charge you criminally for a code enforcement case, and we have done that in a few cases where it's really, really bad. But we don't, yeah, like doing that because it's a punitive measure.
Yeah.
The measures we're trying to implement are ways to prevent that from happening. So. Yeah. Maybe you work with the property owner, we bring a dumpster out and they clean up the property themselves. We're just paying the dump fees. Or if it's a case like this where the, yeah, homeowner isn't securing the property because they're, say this property owner is in that case, they're 80 years old and this is just being left.
Right.
We can secure the property to prevent that from happening.
With their permission, basically.
Or without their permission.
Okay.
It just depends, right?
Yeah, like, okay.
Our approach is to work with the property owner until we can't. But if we can't find the property owner or we can't do that, and we can't just do it ourselves, right? So there's a whole process. We actually have to go to Pierce County Superior Court. They're allowed to come into court and represent themselves. The court then grants you access. So there are checks and balances to that system. Mm-hmm. And we can't do it just willy-nilly. I mean, there's the budget. You don't have the budget for that. So these would be the most egregious cases. And the other way to look at it is part of your public safety plan with your police department, mm-hmm, because if we can get in and prevent those things or clean those things up, it's less calls for the police department. So it's kind of a, when you think about it, it's part of that police enforcement side. It's just kind of early intervention. We do lien the property to recover the resources because we can't gift public funds. And maybe the dumpster program there, we can talk with the city attorney to see if there's a way with the dumpster program, we can do that for low income, under some provisions for low income. So there's lots of ways you can work the program. We haven't explored all of those because there hasn't been the funds to do that. So I would say these are actually less punitive measures. What we use now are the punitive, which is fining and criminal enforcement and stuff like that.
And coming in and boarding up, you actually are protecting that property owner's asset from potential further damage. Yeah, yeah. There'll be a small lien put on it, but paying off a $3,000 lien versus having $50,000 more worth of damage done, you know, when they sell that home.
Yeah. I think the thing that also gave me pause is, and I know that you were just talking just in, you know, not that it is happening, but, you know, the whole, like, if we were to fine, let's say, people $1,000 a day, and I know it costs money, you know, to do these things, so it's not like we can just let people you know, off the hook while we're paying for all of their things. But again, it's like, it still gives me pause in that, even if we were to charge somebody $1,000 a day every time, you know, we have to come out there and do the things, like it adds up. I mean, I've been a property owner of a property that I don't live in, and it is really complicated to.
Well, that's already how we do things.
Yeah, I will say we are very judicious in our use of that. We don't like to fine.
Yeah.
So if you come in and we give you a notice of violation, say you're the property owner and you mm-hmm. call us the day you get it and say, I would love to work on this. It's going to take me 6 months to get it cleaned up. We have a work plan that you enter into that says, these are all the steps that you're going to take. This is how we're going to work with you. Because our ultimate goal isn't to make money. Our ultimate goal is so that the citizens feel that the properties are being maintained mm-hmm. and that we're working with those property owners because we understand those complex relationships. That the property owner that we have in code enforcement is dealing with people who are illegally squatting on their property.
Yeah.
And so fighting with them isn't going to solve the problem. We have to work together. But we also have properties like the Binning property where there are no responsible property owners
okay.
because everybody has passed away and the property is just sitting in probate.
Okay.
And so it's, like I said, you're absolutely right. It could be abused if it's done wrong. I can't say that it doesn't happen that way. What I can say is that our current staff, all the way from the city administration down, is we want to work with the property owners to solve it. But we just have cases where we can take steps to help property owners that we can't take right now. That if we had some financial resources, we could do things in a last punitive way. And we also agree that the fines at $1,000 are too steep for every violation. So as part of the code enforcement chapter or title we'll be bringing you by the end of the year,
yeah.
we're going to differentiate those violations
okay.
so that the egregious ones.
Yeah.
Are where we really are hitting people with fines. I mean, it's hard. We've had a couple, just to give you an example on the fining side. Someone plugged a builder decided to put their sewer line into the stormwater line that went into the city stormwater pond.
Mm-hmm.
And so raw sewage was being dumped into our stormwater yeah. pond. They got fined, right? The View by Vintage, who has not been doing well at keeping the trash controlled, not the residents, the management company, they have been fined because they have not. They've refused to take steps to clean up the garbage. So it, I agree, it could be ripe with abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Don't disagree with you, but it's a necessary tool in the tool belt that has to be used judiciously. And we do have a free appeal process for people with civil penalties. So if you feel like your civil penalty was
unfair,
too much money.
Yeah.
Then you can appeal to the hearing examiner, no cost.
Okay.
And the hearing examiner can take your financial situation
yeah.
into control and actually lower the fee. And that was actually a Supreme Court decision that came out a couple years ago. So if you're, because we don't know your financial resources, right? So if you come in and say, hey, this will bankrupt my family, the hearing examiner has the authority to lower that fee. And it does not cost the homeowner anything to do that appeal.
Council Member Fullerton, did you have any thoughts before we move forward?
No, I'm just trying to kind of process so the budget items make it so that you can process this more efficiently then, you know, and you have more tools in your belt, but we're not going to. I'm just trying to figure out what the justification is for $75,000 or $150,000.
We have a full-time employee with a $5,000 budget that probably doesn't paper to print out the fines.
Right.
Are you thinking that it's too high? Because right now it's at $5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to figure out what. Are we asking for 150 or are we asking for 75?
Well, we're in the middle of a biennium budget, so it'd be 75 yeah. to get us through 24, and then and that all we would see as a council this year that that. And then next year in October, November, there'd be decision cards. We'd get a vote on at that point on adding it to the budget. So,
and what I can commit to is if the council were to give us budgets for 2024, we can come through either quarterly or monthly and report kind of.
And after 24, you may be able to say for 25, 26, it's only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can come through and report what the actual costs were for things,
yeah.
And what we're spending that money on, and the council can then determine that long-term commitment. We can do that on a quarterly basis, but to get to Councilmember Fullerton's question, I believe, you know, a dumpster, you're paying, I want to say, what, 40?
For the tonnage alone, if Murray's were to donate the box, it'd probably be at least a couple grand, $35
a ton or something.
Yeah, two or $3,000 will give us a dumpster, one dumpster. So if we have some properties out there that say, hey, I'll clean up the property if you give me the dumpster, you know, then I can work with the city attorney to see if we want to do that for low income. It's kind of part of our low income, so they don't have to even pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
But we can work that. I can talk to the city attorney that, but you know, a $10,000 would allow us to do three dumpsters, four dumpsters, you know. So what we're thinking with the $75,000, you've got some dumpsters in there. You've got some couple, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 maybe to board up some properties. And then you've got, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 to deal with some of our, you know, I know there's one that's going to come in October. When you see those pictures, you'll know what I'm talking about. Some of those types of properties where we have just mountains of garbage. And that would allow us to hire a contractor to come in and scoop up all the garbage, pay all the dump fees, board up the properties, and secure those things. So that's, you know, there's a lot on code enforcement. You know, code enforcement doesn't only just do this, but they also have the entire enforcement authority for our entire water service area. So people who not backflow devices, you know, so it's a large program to be thrown on the shoulders of one individual. I help out as best I can, but Shaylee is doing the heavy, 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 heavy lifting, and it's a lot. Our water service area alone is 60,000 people. So, did I say that correctly, Ryan? 40. Oh, 40. Sorry. I apologize.
So this will help more people than it will harm. I don't want anyone to be harmed by code enforcement.
I will say my position, it would hurt. It would help more people than it would harm. And the people that it would help is two groups. One, or three groups. One is your surrounding property owners who have been living with piles of garbage in their backyard. And imagine it being very hot and there's rotting garbage in your backyard.
And probably rats. Right?
Yep, rats. So it will help your surrounding property owners. The property owners who want to work with us will have options. So we'll help them as well. It will also help the police department by reducing the number of nuisance properties, which requires calls for service for ongoing issues that can be handled through just getting the property cleaned up.
And if somebody is having financial difficulties, then the budget would also help with the property owners that are having a financial difficulty, but they definitely want to clean up their properties.
Correct, and that's what I've committed to talking to the city attorney. I don't know. I know some programs you can do for low income that allow us to do it without requiring the reimbursement. The ones that are complete cleanups are like $20,000 or $30,000, probably not. But like getting into dumpster and paying the dump fee, I think we can do those without requiring payback.
So I think the other part that gives me pause is, you know, the low income, and again, I'm thinking of the scale. I'm thinking of the blue collar family that isn't low income, they're middle income. You know what I mean? And they own a property, and that property is getting junked on by somebody. And then now they're getting these fees that, like, yeah, they're not low income, but they can't pay those fees.
Well, we wouldn't charge them any fees unless we're doing the abatement on their property.
Okay.
Right. So if they're abating their own violation and they're signing the work plan and they're cleaning it up, we're not going to do anything.
Okay.
Like the last thing, I'm a homeowner and I don't want to get $1,000 fine in the letter. Right. Like,
yeah,
the only time that we are, quote unquote, mean is when you have ignored me for about 7 or 8 months and haven't done anything on the property, refuse to clean it up. We do then take the mean tactics, but we try not to do that. As I said, the goal of code enforcement and even in all of our policies is voluntary compliance.
Okay.
We want properties cleaned up. We just need some resources to deal with the derelict properties where the homeowner doesn't care, and also some resources where the homeowner just, it's not in their financial wheelhouse to do that. And we're glad, I will report back every dollar we spend and how we spent it. And that way, going forward, the council can see what we're doing. I can't commit, I can't tell you what happened in the future, but I can commit to reporting back on a quarterly basis.
Maybe to see how much of abatement and recording and all that.
Yeah, and what we're spending and how we're spending it, and whether or not we're meeting those principles you've, I guess, laid out. We're not harming people. We're working with people, mm-hmm. and we're doing things as a last resort, and let the council be the judge of it. I don't think that's how we operate, but we can report back figures and let the council make that decision.
Okay, I'm going to move the meeting forward, and I wanted to kind of, I know that there was, you had raised your hand earlier. Was there something you wanted to add or questions or thoughts that you had?
Well, I appreciate that you're looking at your overall program and your overall budget. The property we're concerned about fits in with the other properties. What I didn't hear, and I'm concerned, this council needs to understand, is that it is immediately across the street from Emerald Hills Elementary.
It is obviously
an empty property. Everybody who drives by West and South Tats Highways Junction sees that it's boarded already. It is a known empty property. Kids from that school could easily be using it, getting into trouble, or getting themselves hurt. And I would assume that the council and the school district might have some concerns about their liability regarding that. Mm-hmm.
And you said it's across from Emerald Hills?
Yeah. Directly across from Emerald Hills.
Okay. Nancy, you had a
thought? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, please.
Only that the issue about escalation in the last 6 weeks, two huge trees have fallen. And they could have, one fell onto Kevin's property, the other fell onto the backyard of the owner's property. But it's clearly, there are risks ready to happen all the time.
Unfortunately, having a dead tree on your property is not a code enforcement issue. That's a civil matter between the property owners. And so that, you know, that's not anything that we can do, even with all the things that we're talking about. Just, I can't go out and say, hey, you have a dead tree.
No, I'm just saying that it does.
And those are those ones, I think, where they tell you, write a letter to the property owner. That way, if it falls, because it's a civil matter between the two property owners. It's not an issue that the city would intervene in, even if I got all of these tools from the city council.
Yeah, I have a question about falling trees.
Yes.
So I also know that one of our council members was told they could not cut down a tree, and then the next windstorm it came and it fell on his house. So I mean, as far as codes go, if there's a tree that's rotting out, then that needs to be able to be cut down. So is there a code that's preventing people from being able to cut trees that are a hazard or dangerous?
No, the only thing that we require is documentation that it's actually a hazard from an arborist. And once the arborist submits a report that it's a high or an exceptionally high hazard tree, it can be cut down. The city does not.
That's not on their property, correct?
No, on their property. We can't authorize you to go on someone else's property.
Yeah. Right, but you're saying that, okay, you're saying residents have to get permission to cut a tree on their own property.
Yes. And they have for you.
This is very odd to me.
It sparked a lot of debate in a lot of different places too.
The way that the code works is all you have to do is get the arborist report to say it's a high or exceptionally high.
You have to pay an arborist.
You have to pay the arborist. And the only reason we do that is because we don't have an arborist on staff to go out and look at it and verify that it's that way. Mm-hmm. I am not an arborist. I can't go out and look at a tree and say it's dead or diseased or dying.
Okay.
So we push that back on the property owner to have that arborist. I would love to have an arborist on staff. But
is this if a person complains about the tree, somebody else complains?
This is just on your own property.
I don't know that I like that. Okay.
Jason, there's size. A sapling, you can.
No, it has to be over 6 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
54 inches above the ground.
Yeah.
Those are big trees. They're not little bitty trees. So the really, really big ones, yes.
Hmm.
Because the community as a whole wants to protect. This is always the trouble. The community as a whole wants to have the beautiful trees that make up Bonnie Lake,
mm-hmm.
but they want them on everybody else's property.
Of course they do.
Right.
Yeah. But it's my property.
Right. So it's it's one of those things that trees do provide a public benefit. and I know that's not on the agenda, but yeah,
like what Justin said. I'm sure it's a hot debate.
There's lots of pros and cons on both sides.
And I blame John Denver for his little Arbor Day thing.
Okay, we have one.
Yeah, Nancy, go ahead.
So thank you. This is a great discussion about the derelict house. I appreciate what you guys are going through. It sounds to me, you know, I always think, look at council's role as policy. So you kind of phased it to fines, the nuisance thing, and then the abatement, mm-hmm. the three. Is there a policy in place that they can look at to kind of see the phases that you go through and who gets charged for what? Mm-hmm. It feels like that would be very helpful, the council, to see that, to understand, you know, where are we at? Are we in the fine section? Are we in the nuisance? Are we in the abatement? And then when does the, you know, the city prosecutor get involved as far as liening a property? How often have we gotten the liens back once we do that? It seems like that would be one thing that would be helpful.
I can answer the first one before we move on so we don't.
Okay.
So the whole process is actually laid out in our municipal code, title 14130, chapter 14130 about how it kind of from start to finish and what all the penalty provisions are. The prosecutor actually doesn't get involved until we file someone with criminal charges, which means we're now charging the property owner criminally for a code enforcement case. I think we've done it 3 times because you're taking that. I mean, that's the ultimate punitive punishment, right? I'm charging you with a misdemeanor. It does happen, and one was just on the news. Guy's going to spend 18 months in jail for illegally dumping into toxic waste into the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it can't be done. It's just it's a very punitive step, and it takes a while to work through that. The liens, we haven't really recovered any because we haven't done them, because we haven't been to that process yet. We required one. $4,000.
Okay. So, and then Council Member Baldwin, I appreciate mm-hmm. your taking that pause. You always ask the questions and kind of the pause of people's rights, you know, and thinking about that. But these people also have rights.
Right.
And we have a couple of properties near us. I don't think it's to the extent that you guys have. We've seen that house. We went out for the East Pierce Fire dock number program to deliver plates to everybody's docks. So we had to walk onto that property and it's bad. And that was 4 years ago. Yeah. So we've seen what have seen. Yeah. So I feel like we need to balance those rights and this particular, and I think there's also, it sounds like the code enforcement or the planning director or the code enforcement officer are really using restraint in what they're doing. I don't think anybody's marching right to abatement. So I don't think that fear of pulling people's rights is probably doesn't feel like that's something that's on the table. But it seems like every property needs to be looked at individually because this particular property is vacant, has been for years. The property taxes are current. And to answer your question, Council Member Baldwin, the owner lives on Stag Island. Mm-hmm. So I think the resources, and I don't know, we cannot make assumptions, might be there.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that they need to put up with, you know, what's going on when there's other things going on. I mean, I think that by looking at each property individually and asking those questions is, are they really low income? Mm-hmm. Is there other things that we can do before we kind of push the pedal to maybe the third phase of what it is? But I just really feel for people who for years have been putting up with it and there's laws on the books and we're just saying, we can't apply them either because the budget's not there or because we don't want to go as far as violating people's property rights.
Right. Okay.
That's my take.
No, that's right.
I appreciate the clarification on that. Yeah. Thank you.
Abatements are the last stop.
Puts things in perspective.
Everything is a voluntary compliance. The last stop. The last thing we want to displace people, take away homes,
Okay.
It's not fine.
And on the property rights thing, we can't do it unilaterally. Okay. There is a checks and balance to the system.
Yeah.
We have to go to Pierce County Superior Court and have a judge find that it's a nuisance property, that we need to abate it. And then if they're giving us another chance to abate it through the court system.
Right.
And then we get to go on and abate it. Okay. So this isn't something that you, one you charge in lightly. It's not just like, oh, Shaylee and I, let's go abate it. We're going to get a contract and go do it. There's lots of hurdles you have to jump.
Yeah.
In order to do those constitutional provision protections for property rights.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Very good. Okay. Yes.
Two observations. The house's current assessed value is $809,000. So the property is about $545,000 and the house is like $345,000 improvements. Second observation, has the city attorney weighed in on all of this? Because I believe that there may be civil liability on the part of the city. The adjacent property owners have put the city on notice that there's a problem. The issue in my mind is, you know, I was always warned when I was working for a living, never try and practice law, so I always had to go to the attorney to get good advice. The issue on abatement, the city experiencing any kind of cost that's lienable on the property, start stacking the liens to the point where you could move to have the property go to sheriff's auction is a viable alternative for properties that need to be abated. So if there are $1,000 a day fines, pile it on, put the liens on the property, move for the sheriff to auction, and the property owner will either get off the dime and take care of the property or they'll lose the property at auction.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I would never recommend that because you should go to your attorney.
And that's why I'm saying we are bringing forth a new code enforcement title that's being worked on in conjunction with Jennifer, the city attorney. So I guess one way to look at this, if you authorize the budget amendment for 2024, the whole code to support those things with all of these concepts and checks and cross checks will have been done. Okay. So it would be kind of a you'll be doing both on the basically the same night probably.
But are we saying that there's nothing's going to be done until you get budget in 2024? Are these people going to get any relief? Because what I heard, remember I was the finance director, you said you had $10,000 of unrecognized revenue. So my first thought was budget amendment, $10,000 of revenue that you can recognize and give you budget capacity for this year.
Well, they're doing the biennium budget amendment right now. They won't be done until the review. So,
but what... So what relief would these people have before the end of the year?
The best we can do is we can get, we could probably maybe try to figure out if we can get the sign installed and work with the property owner, and that would allow the police department to arrest people that go on the site. That's about, with current budget, about as far as we can go.
They've arrested people on the site twice already.
And that's about as far as...
Is what Nancy's saying possible?
Is it a budget?
You're saying that there is a 10 grand basically...
Well, that's what we would use to fund the budget amendment that Justin is asking us to bring forward.
Okay. That Sheriff's budget amendment process doesn't have anything approved till the end. So if you're looking for the budget amendment to somehow speed something forward, it's only going to go as fast as the entire package gets approved. And right now, I think that's...
Budget amendment can't be done now till the end of the year, is that right?
You don't do budget amendments continuously.
That's a process governed by the CFO. I'm not going to comment on how she's choosing to run that.
Okay.
But right now, I do know her schedule has that being finally approved in November.
Can you send me an email then, what your thoughts are, and I'll digest them, and then I'll see maybe. Yeah, because you're right. That's a different.
It just seems like the year that's like a whole quarter away.
Okay.
It seems like a long time for no relief.
One of the things we could do is pass it intermittently, be included in the budget amendment. I mean, again, I gotta speak for Sherry and how that's
right.
That'll be done. I know Jenna before on individual line items, but I know it's not the ideal something I would want her to weigh in on. I won't make that
for
call.
Sure. For sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to move to agenda item F for open committee discussion. All right. How about you, Councilmember Fullerton? Anything you want to add in an open committee discussion on your mind that you'd like to discuss?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Is this something different?
When did we add item G?
Yeah.
That's
an accidental. It's, if we allow public comment at any point of the meeting, you have to allow other opportunities for it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, we're moving to agenda item G, as in Gary, for public comment. So it looks like, do I read this out loud?
Yeah.
Nixon. Okay, if there's any more public comment, whether it's online, did we have the person that was online?
He actually ended up coming in.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting until the next month meeting.
Okay, gotcha.
I just wanted to come here to see how this is run and...
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Any other things that?
So I going back to your guys' budget with code enforcement, is there any way to, like, I have my own construction business, right? So I'm a licensed in the city, bonded, insured. I'd be more than happy to donate my time to board houses if you guys provide them, you know, the materials. Go to Home Depot, I'll buy the OSB, I'll go board it up. Obviously, I would need police presence or someone from the city to, you know, stand there. But if that would help shave that budget down a little bit to make that cost a little less, I'll provide the labor and I'll provide the trucks.
Yeah, I'll have to talk to, like, the attorney from what we can on donated items.
Yeah.
It's, you know, still that cost issue of buying the OSB, the legal cost of going and getting abatement orders, because we have to do that. But we can't just say, you'll go board that up. I have to actually go to court and get the court to grant me authority to access the property. But yeah, I can talk to the city attorney about donated labor.
My only other concern is my liability on my end, but, you know, being on someone else's property without the permission.
And that's what goes to the court order.
So
thank you for that offer. I will gladly look into that.
Okay.
As we prepare this whole kind of program.
If you're going to be speaking with the attorney, could there maybe be, I'm assuming you're going to be discussing civil liability.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I will raise that with the city attorney and get her a legal opinion.
Okay. Sounds great. Okay. Well, I guess that's the last item on the agenda. So the meeting is now adjourned.
Can I ask one question? We've been off the radar screen. When will the police chief, has it been announced yet, going to be?
I don't know if it's been publicly announced yet.
I thought it was at this point.
Yeah, Mark Ferry has been selected and is subject to council confirmation tonight.
We didn't have a chance to interview him before you did.
No, you did not.
In Seattle, that would never work. Mark Ferry. Thank you.
He's currently the
Council Member Baldwin.
Here's
Council Member Baldwin.
Oh, yeah.
Did we...